Hello and welcome to the Utah Puck Report. I'm your host, Jay Stevens. We've got a very special guest in the studio today, Dave Amani, a local agent. Yep. Come on up, speaking to the mic. I made fun of Ben for sitting too far back. Unfortunately, Ben Wilner pulled a shoot on us.
Standard.
Yeah. It's not men's league, though. He's just, you know, not a penalty shot where he can act like he pulled a hammy.
It's probably for his best interest he didn't show up, though.
I know you and I were working on, we had like a half hour of material just to make fun of him today. And
yeah, I got a lot more than that.
Yeah, so that must be why I didn't show up. No, we're just kidding. But we were hoping Ben could be here and contribute, but he actually has a job.
Yeah,
he got a real job, yeah. So anyway, Dave, for those of you who don't know, is a, well, not a local guy, but became a local guy. And we'll get into that, but he is a hockey agent, and he also helps run one of the local travel team organizations. So, Dave, tell us a little bit about yourself, and like where are you from?
Originally from San Diego. I left home to play junior and to look for a place to play in college, and I had D3 opportunities, but they were mostly the weaker teams back east, pretty expensive private schools and whatnot.
See, that's one of the things a lot of people don't acknowledge is there's not a ton of hockey scholarships for those D2, D3 teams, and they're usually super expensive.
No, like I was looking at schools in Boston I had offers at, and it was approaching $30,000 a year for tuition only.
Yeah.
With no on-campus housing, and when you look at that, versus where I ended up going at Weber State, it was, I think, $1,500 a semester.
yeah, pocket change.
Yeah, housing was pretty cheap, so financially it was a good move.
It's crazy. I went through the same thing with my son, who was a decent soccer player, and he had a lot of opportunities to play. He had some D1 offers, but he had a lot of D3 offers and D2 offers. He ended up playing D2 or at a D2 school. And still, like some of those schools were $60,000-$70,000, and the D1 offers we were looking at, or schools that we were looking at, like Notre Dame, Pepperdine, $90,000.
Oh yeah, and not only the cost, but if you look at the attendance, you're looking at a 5,000 person school. And I mean, my high school, my graduating class had 2,000 people in it. I'm not looking to go and relive high school.
Okay, so what brings you to Weber State? Just the cost, or did you know players there?
It was
there?
a good hockey program at the time. They were coming off, I think, a fourth place finish in Nationals.
Yeah.
It was right when they expanded to the D1 team, so
right.
I had a chance to play a little bit of both levels.
What years were you there?
'04 through '07, I want to say, or 03-04 through 2007.
Okay. All right, so, yeah, obviously they had a pretty good foundation
there. Yeah, I mean, when I was there, we lost in the semifinals and D1 Nationals. I mean, it was a good program, good hockey, some good players coming out of there. Guys that probably could have definitely played somewhere else if they had, academics or the ambition, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, and I know a couple of those players from that team. I followed that team for a while after I left there. Felt like it was kind of my baby and got to keep it up and saw a definite improvement in a lot of those players. And then for me, I was getting opportunities out of there with the West Coast League and stuff like that. So it was obvious that was like from the first year we were a team to when I left, it was kind of those 2 or 3 years had made some progress for the team. And we had John Kuechel was another player that went right from Weber State and ended up in Europe playing somewhere. And I don't even remember where. I think Nijmegen and Phil Snyder ended up in Nijmegen. But John was also modeling while he was there. So
makes it easy.
So you pick Weber State. You come in. You guys play. Did you graduate from Weber State?
Yep. Graduated with a bachelor's degree there.
Is it in anything that you use? Is it business management or anything?
Integrated studies. So it was the easiest one I can get.
Okay. Sure. Perfect. Yep. All right, I did the criminology program there, and I have no idea why. They were interesting classes, and I was really into, I guess, like the X-Files.
Well, it was cool because I got to pick my classes, basically, and make my own major, I guess. But at the end of the day, I mean, I don't know how applicable it is to anything other than what I'm doing now.
Right. Well, that's perfect.
Yeah.
All right, so at some point while you're at Weber State, if you didn't finish till 2007, didn't you start wanting to be, or like, when did you realize you were going to be an agent?
So I kind of fell into it. I always wanted to be a hockey player, like more than anything growing up. And I just kind of realized like, not quite good enough to make it anywhere. I knew enough people, though, from kind of networking a little bit, and I kind of had a gist of what it would take to play low-level professionally. And so what I did, actually, I needed a thesis project to graduate, or a capstone project to graduate. So I started an agency my sophomore year, into my sophomore season, and I basically tried to represent everyone I played with.
Right.
Like anyone that would let me help them out. I got Aaron Burl from Utah State, Nick Theros, Robert Hashimoto, like a lot of, like TJ Nichol, Eric Milliron, guys like that. Like that really no one else would have interest in to represent. And I ended up getting pretty much all of them jobs, like Seth Libby. But I put like Burl went to Belgium, who else? Theros went to Germany. Guys like that. I just kind of blindly started offering them out and getting them jobs places.
So did you know any of these coaches, or did you just start cold calling?
A lot of emails.
Yeah.
You know, staying up weird hours trying to get, you know, people to answer my phone calls. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing.
Did you go out and get a – so if it's a college project, did you do all the – legal parts? Like, did you get a business license or
probably
certified as an agent yet?
No.
All right, perfect.
And I actually, that first summer, I somehow finagled a coach from Nijmegen in the Dutch League. I flew him to Ogden with every dime I had and had him do some camp, and ended up taking, actually DJ Giletto came out to it, and they offered him a deal on the spot that he turned down. Eric Johnson, a kid that played at Weber with me, like got offered a tryout there. So it was interesting to see. I mean, I was kind of getting a feel of what it would take to play it at specific levels through trial and error, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if you know. I bounced around, obviously, a lot and just ended up either through being an emergency backup goaltender or more through being an equipment rep. I knew coaches through all the leagues. And then through my connections at Shattuck St. Mary's, I'd have players that would be like, hey, you know, can you help me here, or can you make a phone call? So what started out as a phone call for a buddy ended up being, I don't know if you could call it represented, but I had like 15 clients at one time. I wouldn't call them clients because they never paid me. Okay. But people that I knew that I was making, like I put a big list together with links to highlight videos. Like it was a lot of work, and I had no idea why I was doing it because, again, I wasn't getting paid. But I felt this huge responsibility.
Absolutely.
These kids were they were amazing players. And for some reason, like, I think you know, one of the first guys I represented, and I use that term loosely, was Brian Deeth.
Okay.
And he had played at Shattuck St. Mary's and then went to Northeastern.
Yep.
And he had zero offers because he was 5'9" on skates.
Played here briefly.
I said, you know what? Your career is not over. Let me make a phone call. So I call the Utah Grizzlies coach, and I say, I've got a guy for you. And they bring him in. They love him. And then after that, Brian had like five other friends call me. And then, you know, as it starts rounding out, his little brother Kevin calls me. Same thing, but shorter. He comes in, and he led the team in scoring that year. And I don't know if you ended up representing him or whatever, but he ended up over in Europe. And it's just crazy for me, and I'm sure for you, now you're the connection to these guys putting food on the table.
It's stressful sometimes. I mean, I've had many nights with 3-4 hours of sleep. Especially when you have a guy who, when they start to, like, I've taken a lot of guys from their first contract to retirement, essentially, and when they start to develop a family and responsibilities outside of just, you know, having a good time with their money, and they have to pay for, you know, a kid to live, or medical expenses,
or mortgage,
mortgages, or, you know, just life in general, you know, or gets to the point where they're, you know, they can't be playing for peanuts anymore. They have to actually either, you know, make it or get a real job.
Right.
And, you know, it's stressful because, you know, when that happens too, I mean, my revenue stream dries up. So, I mean, it's my obligation to, you know, not only from a moral obligation, but from a business, you know, obligation to make sure they maximize what they can do every contract they get, essentially.
So it's got to be nice to have guys like Evan Stoffler that just don't grow that don't grow up and could still just take whatever contract
like
you throw him.
Peter Pan.
Yeah, exactly.
Stoff is the definition of grinding your way through leagues and finding a way to make a living playing hockey and enjoying the career he's had. I mean, he's played in some terrible places.
Yeah.
Got paid well for some of them, but I'm sure you got a lot of the pictures I got when he was playing in China.
The
deep fried chicken heads they were serving him for dinner. I mean, yeah, terrible.
And those chicken feet that he sent, that was so crazy.
Yeah.
All right, so it's 2005 or whatever. You've got your first clients out there, and I searched our archives when I was doing my research on you. Found a Deseret News article about you, and that's obviously that's our parent company.
So when I was first getting clients, I was, like I said, taking anyone I can get. I was cruising message boards like for players looking for places to play, like the bottom of the barrel players. Literally started with whoever would let me help them out, and then eventually I started to pick up guys out of D1 programs by just cold calling and emailing every D1 coach, every D3 coach in the country, essentially. A lot of Canadian university guys, and they'd send me some of the bottom end guys, and one of the bottom end guys pans out, and they have a buddy that calls me and turns into, like, even now it's all referral based,
right? And I know a lot of times people talk about it, my agent took this much or my agent takes this much. Well, do you do a percentage or do you do like a flat rate, or does it depend on the league?
So when I was first starting out, I would help out guys in North America a lot too, like in terms of the East Coast Hockey League and, a little bit in the American League and some of the lower end leagues. When I did that, I charged them a flat fee. But I mean, nowadays I mostly focus on the overseas market just because it's more, from a time perspective, makes more sense, because the commissions are a little bit higher and the team pays those commissions for the most part.
Yeah.
So when a guy signs, I'll get anywhere, a percentage of their contracts, I guess. And, those are usually paid up front by the team, or with not up front, but once they pass their physicals.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I knew they did that with soccer, but I didn't know they did that with hockey. That's
not quite
that's
as
cool.
Lucrative as a soccer contract, so unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. I've one of my really good friends is a long time. He's a soccer legend.
Yep.
And then he became an agent, and he was telling me some of them,
it's insane.
Yeah. Some of those deals that he'd make, and just by calling a player and talking about it, going to a different team or whatever. And same thing, he barely would represent anybody in Major League Soccer. He's just like, it's
not even worth it.
Yeah, I'm just going to spend my time with the European thing. So it's 2005, and you had your first company.
Yep.
And that was your college project. What happens with that company? What was it called, and what ended up happening to it?
That was the Imonte Athlete Management Group, and I sold it on eBay.
What?
My senior year, I flipped it on eBay to someone in Detroit for at that time, I was a senior in college. I thought I was loaded.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a big deal for me. And because I was kind of didn't know what I wanted to do at that time. I kind of wanted to try to play somewhere myself with the connections I had made. I kind of was looking at opportunities to go maybe work at a bigger agency. And I figured I needed, the money would help me, make that first step. So I flipped it and, ended up going to play in France for a season.
Is it still around? Is that whoever bought it? Do they still run it?
I don't think so.
Okay. Probably they weren't as driven as you were.
No, and most of the guys fired the guy promptly.
Okay.
So,
that wasn't in the contract when you sold it, huh?
And again, I was, 21 years old. I'm sure none of it was legal. But it was,
Well, it's funny because so one of the guys that I ended up giving players to is John Oliver.
Yep.
And he's, he's coaching in Idaho now, and he was the coach of the Steelheads, and they ended up in Western Michigan. And
J.O.
Yeah, J.O.'s an amazing person. And we sat down a couple of years ago when I was coaching in the Western States League, and we were in the Vegas tournament.
Yep.
I sat down to lunch. He's like, so did you were you a certified agent when you were doing all that? And I said, wait, there's a certification? No, I had no idea. Talking about the legalities of it. And, and so now that you're an older, wiser person,
yep.
You're legal.
Oh, 100%.
Do a lot of agents, aren't they lawyers?
Over in North America, when you're dealing with the NHL, there's a lot of collective bargaining involved. There's a lot of, I know certain players in the NHL who's their agent overlooks something and it ends up costing them millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And so it's in their best interest to have someone with a legal background, but it's not required by any means. There's some good agents or very good agents that don't have legal backgrounds, but they have someone in their company that
right.
is a lawyer, so that kind of, you know, double checks everything before it's finalized.
Okay. But a lot of the contracts, at least the thousand of them that I've signed, are just based. And granted, now they have an e-bug contract, yeah. But they used to give me an actual contract. And it seemed like they just, like the East Coast League or the West Coast League, just had a standard contract with a blank spot where they'd put in your weekly pay and your per diem.
But, and that's in the East Coast League, like, to be fair, most of those guys, if you're not an NHL contract or have potential to, or even an American League deal, they don't really need someone helping them out.
Right.
Unless they're really trying to grind and they're just need a foot in the door, I guess. But, I mean, most of those contracts, it doesn't take much to finalize.
So we talk about that you've matured now as a agent. When you look back, I want to talk to you a couple things. First, what's the biggest mistake looking back that you think you've made? Is there one, or is there a couple examples?
Maybe just a little bit when I was first starting out, underplacing some guys, because to be fair, like, I really didn't know the market as well as I do now.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever really done anything where I screwed someone out of anything, you know, thankfully. But maybe just being uneducated over certain things when I was first starting out, I would say.
Just cutting your teeth, learning. Yeah. You've got to learn just like everybody else has got to learn.
And I mean, they got paid decent money, but they could have maybe played at a higher level. Some good players played lower levels just because of it.
Oh, okay.
But for the most part, I don't think there's anything specifically like I'm like, oh, geez, that was a blunder.
Yeah. What would you say now you're obviously successful? You sold your first company, which is awesome. Yep. I think that's a great story. And then now you've got your second company, 37?
Yep. And so what with that, you know, I've been running that. So what I did was I went to France to play for a year, played in the Paris area for a season, came back and finished the season in like a single A level league in the East Coast, was actually signed to play in Germany the second year and was ready to go, came to Ogden to clean out my town home and everything, and I started dating my wife. We had known each other in college, and kind of, you know, when that opportunity came along, I knew it was something I couldn't pass up. So I did that, retired on the spot, basically, and went to work for selling data backup for 6 months and realized I hated it.
Yeah.
And kind of went all in on, I mean, the economy sucked right then. So, I mean, they were laying people off anyways. And so I took that at the severance and kind of, jump-started another company and, you know, had a little bit more understanding when I went in this time. But, you know, it's been, 10 years now, something like that, 11 years with this company. And, yeah, it's going well.
So what pitfalls would you tell somebody else to watch out for?
In the agency business, it's a dirty business.
It's
every, especially like in the German market, the Swedish market, I'll have players trying to be poached from me on a daily basis. If you're not, I mean, I spend probably 45 days a year overseas, just visiting players, visiting teams, because if you don't, you'll lose them quick. And it sucks because if that were to happen, all the hard work I've taken, done to take a guy from making $500 a week in the East Coast League to making six figures overseas is all out the window because someone swooped in and you know, basically reaps the benefits of it.
So, you know, that's crazy to think about. You don't have like a contract with that player.
But at the end of the day, it's like I tell guys, it's like a girl. If your girlfriend tells you they don't want to be with you anymore, what are you going to do? Force her to?
Right. Okay.
You know, if they want to fire you, they're going to fire you.
I've heard of that happening, and I've heard it happening to you before. Evans actually told me.
Yep.
I don't know if it was him or somebody else or whatever. That as soon as they got over there, like you get them there. You get them from the U.S. to there, and then they have agents that go
crazy.
There. Yeah.
It
really is a cutthroat market.
Oh, it's extremely dirty, and if you're not, you know, a naive person can get taken advantage of very quickly. And I've had to learn to be a little more street smart in regards to that over the course of my career, but still a threat daily. I mean,
all your hard work can just go away because somebody else comes in and looks shiny.
Yeah, someone will come and essentially say, well, we've got XXX players that have moved on from here, and they'll we've got this contract for this guy and whatnot, and I'm sure most of the time they exaggerate it.
Right.
And they tell them what they want to hear and tell them how great they are, and you're out the door.
So, and I know that similar stuff happens even in the NHL.
Yep.
Just some of the people I've known and been close to over the years. I don't want to say any names, but one of the players that he's a NHL superstar, and I was there when somebody approached him, an agent approached him at a charity event and just said, hey, did you know your agent was doing this?
Yep.
Like, we would never do that to you. Basically accusing his agent, who was a family friend, and just saying, hey, he's taken back ends off your deals. And I guess it turns out there was some truth to it. It wasn't as bad as the other guy said, but it was crazy to me that somebody would even take that approach, knowing that there was a family history, like a long family history.
Well, see, in my approach, I've never tried to. It's not my place to come in and tell someone, speak poorly of another person and their business, because it's just bad karma, I think, and it comes back to bite you a little bit.
Yeah.
And plus, it makes you look stupid, I think, when you're going around telling everyone, such and such guy, agent's a weasel. Because what if they, like you said, what if they are a family connection? What if they have had the guy since they were 14 years old and they believe everything this guy says? It also insults the player at the same time.
Right.
I'm a believer in the truth will come out eventually. And if you're just patient, you keep a relationship with the person. I mean, it all works out in the end.
Let your work speak for itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I believe in that as well.
Yeah.
And that's good to hear. I mean, obviously you're not going to say otherwise while you're on the air, but I've known you long enough. I know that's how you operate.
Yeah, I don't think mudslinging or name-calling really ever – it's just not professional at the end of the day.
Have you had a player that surprised you that you thought would barely get into a league and ended up being awesome and maybe playing high leagues?
So, one player, I had a player, Patrick White, who was a first-round pick of the Vancouver Canucks, so I guess he wasn't a complete surprise, but he was also voted the biggest flop of the decade in the draft.
Yeah.
And the guy who had him before me had him placed in the third league in Germany, which is semi-pro at best, and most guys have jobs.
Yeah.
There's two import players per teams and whatever. I mean, actually, Andy Sertich, who played here for a while, was one of my guys for a long time. And Patrick White's father is Andy's banker, so I got put in touch that way.
Oh, wow.
And long story short, I put Patrick in Slovakia within 12 months of signing with a client who was in the KHL, which is...
Yeah, the NHL equivalent, right?
Second best
league
in the world, and this kid went from playing rec hockey, essentially, to, second best league in the world, just because of a couple bounces, and I was shocked, to say the least. I mean, I thought this guy was going to make $2,000 a month and cap out.
Right. Because there are guys that get drafted high and then fizzle out. And,
a lot of them.
Yeah, and it's funny, I've ran into a lot of them... E-bogging or even playing, I remember playing with a first round draft pick when I was playing that professional roller hockey league.
Oh, yeah.
And here I am, I'm backing up a guy that's drank his way out of the league. But those guys still have the talent. They usually just need some kind of, it's not a belief in them, but it's usually a reality check or something. But it's cool to be able to get a hold of a guy like that and help him reestablish himself, a guy that had so much promise.
And those guys are honestly a little more. I guess you feel better about yourself at the end of the day when you make a difference in someone's life like that, and help them kind of realize a goal, right? Go from being irrelevant to kind of relevant again.
Yeah.
And it could change their life if they want it to.
Well, guys are coming from the KHL to the NHL all the time.
All the time.
There's definitely a path there. There are guys that refuse to come back.
Yep.
There are guys that think the KHL is better. It pays amazingly,
all net money, and I usually tell guys that you have to basically make double what your European salary is. You have to make double that in North America for it to be equivalent, just after taxes, agent fees, and escrow, and everything like that. Whereas overseas, everything's net, schedules, you know, 30-40% less.
Yeah.
You know, sleeping in your own bed most nights. It's a lot of perks to it.
Can you get me an e-bug deal over there in Russia? Sounds pretty good.
Never know.
Okay, so everybody else wants to go to the NHL. Is that your hope? Is that your goal? To have a bunch of NHL players in the stable?
At one point, that was my goal, but I'm pretty content with my niche right now.
Yeah.
I'd rather focus on being the best at one thing as opposed to spreading myself too thin.
Okay.
The NHL is such a competitive market. I mean, we talked at the draft, I talked to some of these agents that they're recruiting and buying equipment for kids at 13 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, if I bought 2006 for a 13-year-old, my wife would kill me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. And I'd say 99 out of 100 of these kids don't pan out.
Right.
Like, one agent was actually telling me he got audited, and the accountant said, this is the worst business model I've ever seen. Like, how much money you're spending to try to recruit these guys, and no guarantee that you're going to get them.
I did that a lot, whether it was legal or questionable as a player rep or as an equipment rep too. I had to go scour all the high school games in Minnesota, and I was at the Minnesota State playoffs for 5-6 straight years, dropping sticks off.
Oh, it's insane!
And
there's such competition nowadays, especially with like the social media and everything like that. All these kids are saying so-and-so is getting this attention, so-and-so is getting that attention. It's not like in the 90s when, you know, it was all rumors and myths and whatnot. Now it's they see it with their own two eyes, and there's a lot of jealousy, a lot of individualism, and you have to kind of deal with that. And, you know, when they know that this kid's getting such and such from this agent, it's just not something I want to get in.
But I don't blame you. That's good. And it sounds like it's a part of that aging, again, some of that wisdom that you've gained to be able to realize a great place to be and a great place to make your niche and make your dollar.
I'll never get NHL rich, but I can make a decent living doing what I'm doing, you know?
Yeah, perfect. So besides being a player agent, now you've also taken on another responsibility with West Coast Renegades.
Yep.
Is it still the Renegades?
Yep, it's the Renegades.
I always mess that up even when my son was playing. I kept calling them the Regulators.
Most people do.
Yeah. So West Coast Renegades, take us through that process. How long ago did you take over and what's your role there?
So I had literally zero interest in working in youth hockey. Yep. A lot of the hockey parents are
insane.
Too much for me.
Yeah.
Another reason why I focus on the pro hockey is I don't want to deal with hockey parents at all. Actually, Fred Wilner, Ben's dad, kind of wrote me into a meeting with Joe Durso in July of the year I took over, so what, 3 years ago? Kind of tried to get my feet wet on it, and I was still very lukewarm at best. They mentioned they needed a new coach. Kevin McClellan's been one of my good friends. Actually, he was the first coach to ever return my calls on a regular basis when I started out as an agent.
Really? Okay.
So
that's cool.
Like, you know, me and him had a pretty good relationship to the point that I was doing most of his recruiting for his teams at one point.
Oh, wow.
When he was coaching pro. But when Mac came in and took over as a head coach, I kind of helped facilitate that. And then Mac was in my ear a little bit about it. Joe and Fred were also, and kind of wore me down after a little bit. And I kind of saw that they had a good thing going. The Dursos have the right intentions in a market that, or a youth hockey market that, from what I've heard in the past, had people with less than good intentions.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also knew that there wasn't a fantastic reputation with the program at the time, and it was going to be a lot of work, and I underestimated how much work it was going to be initially. It needed a lot of untangling and kind of getting a direction in place, because they had games against all the right teams, but for no purpose. They really had no like development plan in terms of moving kids on. And now what we've done is we got them in a league. Last year was in a little bit lower league. This year they're in the East Coast Elite League. It's based all on the East Coast. Most of the games are in Boston, Connecticut, and I think New Hampshire also. But what it is, it gets some exposure to all the D1 schools, all the D3 schools, some of the East Coast junior programs that they might not get exposure to otherwise.
Right.
I mean, it's not all North American Hockey League, NA3, HL, USHL. It's, you know, they have opportunities to go play. And some of the bigger East Coast programs were there, you know, within an hour drive of 20 D1 programs.
Yeah, that's amazing. I have to agree with you, too, on the intent of the program now. And I think the owner's intent was always there.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I've met, I've met them a few times, and I've coached against that organization a lot. And it's always seemed to me like the potential was there, but the right pieces weren't there. So you come in, and now are you the GM of the organization, or what's?
Yeah, I'm responsible for all the hiring and, you know, appointing coaches and whatnot. I help out with a little bit of the recruiting, like for the overseas guys, but I let the coaches kind of make their own choices, just because I'm not around enough with all of them to really know the players as well as they do. And kind of help them get a direction of what teams we're going to have each year, and try to continue to get into leagues that are good but not above where we are, because I don't want to embarrass anyone.
Right.
I want to get in there and be challenged but not be out of our league, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, Kevin McClellan and I talked a little bit about that. Yep. As far as players playing in games, not just to say that they played against that team.
Absolutely.
You got to be somewhat competitive. And there's a huge difference in going in and getting blown out 20-0. And even if you don't win, even if you do get blown out, just to be able to develop. Because some of those games you're not going to develop in unless you legitimately belong there. That's what I
100%.
Believe. Anyway. Yeah. So you bring in Kevin McClellan. How many teams do you guys have now?
We have three teams. We have a 16, a 15, and a 14, undecided on what we're going to have next year.
Oh, I thought you guys had it. You don't have an 18 this year?
No.
Oh, okay.
No 18s.
And they all play AAA?
Yep, all AAA.
Tier 1. I don't know what they call it. It's still Tier 1, AAA.
Yeah, Tier 1. They're right now, the 15s and 16s are middle of the pack in their league.
That's exactly where you want
to
be.
Right where we want to be. Yeah. I mean, against some good programs from New Jersey, from Boston. A couple of the kids have D1 schools that have approached us at games, just inquiring about them. And it's also good, too.
It's impressive.
We're on trips. We get to get them out to D1 games. I took them to Morning State at Quinnipiac last time we were there, so they get a little bit of exposure to the game, just kind of see what it takes on a day-in, day-out basis and what these guys do to prepare and how they do it on their own and don't need someone babysitting them the whole time.
Is there a percentage of local guys you guys keep on this team, on these teams?
No set specifics, but I'd say each roster is probably 75% local.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it would be less than that, honestly. I thought it would be less than 50%.
Well, in the past, they'd focused on primarily recruiting from out of the area.
Yeah.
But I found that those kids that they bring in weren't great. I mean, they were available for a reason.
Okay.
Either they weren't very good or, you know, I guess not to knock any of them, but I mean, they weren't the
there's a reason they weren't making it in their home state.
They weren't the first choice for their program. And like you look at a Colorado kid, he can't make one of the four teams in the state.
Right.
I mean, is he going to be better than what we have here? You might as well give the opportunity to a kid here and develop them locally as opposed to doing it for someone else.
With all the development that we've had here, the better coaching that seems to have been here over the last 10 years, do you think that's contributing to you having such a high percentage of Utah players on your roster and then competing at a Tier 1 level?
I'll tell you what. Mac has been a huge, huge boost to that in terms of developing them, giving them confidence. The turnover, like kids wanting to leave. When I first took over, it was every year there was kids wanting to leave the state after one decent season. Now they want to stay and they want to continue. I mean, to the point that we have kids wanting to stay and play 18s as opposed to going to play junior with any junior team that'll take them. And there's plenty of them that'll take them now. They all want to stay and continue to develop within the state and play with their buddies.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. It's not something we had in the past.
No, every kid took the first opportunity they had to get out of the state. The
places they shouldn't have went.
Yeah. I just, it's awesome to me. And I think to anybody listening right now, it's gotta be, if you're a hockey parent right now and you're worried about that, because we've talked to Daniel Brickley and we've talked to Trevor Lewis, who left at 14. And next week we've got Nick and Alex Halloran on, and they left home at 14. And my son started having to, think about that at 14. And as a parent, I didn't have kids to have them leave home at 14. That's kind of the thing. It's nice to have a place here. And it was cool to me. My son was basically done with hockey when Kevin reached out to him and brought him into the Regulators organization. Renegades.
Close enough.
Dang it. I was going to get it right the whole time. I should have written it down somewhere. Anyway, the West Coast organization. And he had so much fun finishing out the season with them and played in some fun tournaments with them that he considered playing another year. This is after he decided not to go to the USHL. He thought, well, maybe I'll just play one more year with these guys instead of going to college right away. Because that was his whole reason. And I think that just speaks volumes to what you guys have done. I admire the program. I'm glad that it's here. I'm glad that the Tier 2 programs here seem to be cleaning up their acts as well and stepping up.
It's a lot better.
They're not saying they're Tier 1 when they're not.
No.
Unless I missed something. And they're not intentionally or unintentionally or trying to just fulfill parents' dreams. You know what I mean?
Because
it seemed like that's what it was a lot of times. Like the coaches and the organization knew that they had a Tier 2 team, but the parents wanted to say their kids were Tier 1.
Well,
and it was a joke.
The thing with these kids, too, like I noticed from the first tournament I helped Mac out with this year to the second one, just the development, especially with the 15-year-old group.
Yeah.
When that's kind of their first year of, like, I don't want to say real coaching, but like having, well, being with Mac and having someone who has a strict system in place and is a demanding coach. Just seeing the development when they finally start to grasp it and get it and how they respond to him is pretty encouraging. And I think there's some kids that, you know, might have been written off by other people that are really might have a future if a few things go in their favor and they grow a little bit maybe. Just a very hungry and enthusiastic group of kids too on all the teams.
That's really good to hear. And Kevin McClellan had also pointed out some other local coaches.
Yep.
That a couple that weren't from here and then a couple that were from here that he thinks are doing a good job developing. It's good to know that we have those resources here. I one thing I wanted to ask you, and I know this is going to be a hot button. I don't know how much you care about it, but we're going to have a full episode devoted to the Utah High School eliminating your players from eligibility.
I mean, I think it's, in my personal opinion, I think it's a little unnecessary just because, I mean, these kids are in high school. They want to play with their buddies. I mean, they want to have friends. In kind of an era where kids are being segregated from their friends at school and having a hard time making friends, I think it's kind of stupid to take away an opportunity for them to have someone to associate with at school when that's a tough time for so many kids nowadays.
Yeah. I would have to agree with it. And I know it affected my son his senior year just because they didn't do the tier one guys, but they did the junior A guys right away. And that was sad to see because he enjoyed the camaraderie with the high school kids. I don't think he even really enjoyed a lot of those games because it was a different kind of challenge for him as a goaltender. But I keep talking about my son, but that's the only reference I have for high school recently. And it was just frustrating to see that taken away from him. It was such a big deal to me to be able to play at Murray High. That was my first team I'd ever played for. We tended to get a ton of fans.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go play, you know, whatever else you're playing. You guys don't get it. Like, West Coast isn't getting a ton of fans. You're getting parents and maybe some scouts.
We have barely any home games.
Right.
Because, I mean, unfortunately, we're the situation we're in. A lot of teams don't want to come out here to play just because there's no one else for them to play. When we go to Colorado, we can play four different teams. Here, it's four or five games against one team, and
right.
It gets old after a little bit.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we're gonna have representatives from the Utah High School Athletic Association. Actually, no, just from Utah High School Hockey. We're gonna let them come on and defend that position. I'm sure they have, some really good arguments on their behalf, and we're gonna have that be a full episode as well. And just figure this out. Let's just air it out instead of just let's find out from everybody what their preferences are, and get that out to the people. And I think that'll be a good episode. Dave, thanks for coming out.
I really appreciate
your time. You're going to be a good resource for this podcast. I think we're going to have you in a few more times.
Anytime.
We should just have a podcast where we would just bring in me, you, and Evan, and just make fun of Ben.
I'm all for that. I've got a lot of stories.
Okay, so coming up on the Utah Puck Report in the next couple weeks, we have our college kids coming home and our junior A kids coming home. So we're going to talk to Nick Halloran, who was a Hobie Baker finalist, or he was a Hobie Baker nominee last year, and he's playing at Colorado College. And his brother, Alex Halloran, who played at Air Force, and what an amazing accomplishment to make it into one of those academies. We're going to talk to them about, you know, growing up in Utah. They're one of the few that, you know, we talk to these kids that they all say, oh, nobody believed in me, and I wasn't the best until I was 18. These kids were good from freaking 8 years old, and everybody knew they were going to go somewhere, and they did. And that's going to be fun to hear from them. We've got Mason Manick. He gets back in town playing juniors in Portland and the WHL. We also have a cool episode coming out. I've reached out to George Peros from the NHL Safety Commission, a longtime NHL fighter. I'm going to have Scott Mitchell, a longtime NFL quarterback. We're going to talk about concussions in hockey. We're going to talk about what warning signs can you have as a parent and as a coach? What do we look out for, and when do you know it's time to pull your kid out of a game and out of a season? So we've got a lot of good things coming up. If I need you to subscribe, just text 57500. Text the word puck to 57500. That'll get you a link to subscribe. If you have the KSL Sports app, we're right there on there. If you don't have it, you should download it. KSL Sports has an app. So we're going to be covering hockey on there too. Lots of cool sports coverage on there. But Dave, once again, thanks. Sorry, I had to plug the podcast there for a minute. But that's it for us. We're the Utah Puck Report, and we're out.